Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Today's podcast is called The Myth of the Yoga Teacher. It's a little bit windy, so I hope it doesn't interfere with the recording too much. So Pete is going to start by reading an excerpt from one of his many writings about yoga and yoga teaching.
Okay, it's a poem and it's called Spiritual Teachers. Teachers, some are parrots mindlessly repeating what their own teachers repeated, as though your situation was not unique. Others are missionaries who would capture you with this or that story. So urgent is their soul's need to be right. Yet others need you for their pleasure, which is domination. A very few are sages who will tell you they have nothing to teach, who have no desire to hypnotize, convert or enslave you, who will meet you in openness if you can.
Okay, so the myth of the yoga teacher then.
Yeah.
Let's start off, because I think, let's start talking about parrots, as in the first verse of your poem
It is a bit rude of me, I know, but really a lot of what passes for yoga teaching is this kind of parroting activity, from what I can see. I mean, some of the wares being hawked in the spiritual supermarket are actually delivered by teachers who set up classes and actually just work to a script. You know, and their training is to learn the script.
Yeah.
And the fixed routine.
I just find that astonishing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it is, well, a parrot could do it, or a robot could do it. You know, you could get a computer to do it, and it's far too algorithmic. And of course, the point I make in the poem is that approach cannot do any justice to the uniqueness of the individual human being, the person who's heard a rumor about yoga, that it can offer some great goods, and then seeks out somebody to help them. They are unique, you know, and being subjected to algorithmic parrot behaviour, it just takes no heed of that whatsoever. I think that's kind of obvious, isn't it?
Yeah. So that's why when training somebody to be a teacher, you can't teach them in that way.
No. Well, actually, you know, I have a slight problem with this very word teacher. Even though, if somebody asked me, were I ever invited to a dinner party, which is kind of a bit unlikely. And I was asked, well, what do you do then? I say, what I do say when I'm asked that is, well, I draw a pension and I'm a yoga teacher. So I do have to use the language that we've got. But when you try and give these things a bit of a deeper consideration, you know, you need something a bit more nuanced. And of course, the word teacher for most people resonates with what they experienced at school, certainly in societies like ours, where everybody goes to school for, I don't know, 10, 15 years or something of their life. And the teacher is the guy who stands at the front of the class and tells you about the irregular French verbs. Morning. Or the capitals of the European countries, something of that type. And of course, we associate it as well with sitting in the class, and we associate it with examinations, and we associate it with the institutions of school, and we associate it with the fact that the whole thing is managed by the government, and we associate it with the power dynamics of those kind of teaching, you know, in which actually, you have to be in school by law in countries like ours. So there's a power dynamic there as well.
Yeah.
And I'm saying none of that is appropriate to the transmission of yoga. I mean, I do take the rather twee proverb that yoga is caught and not taught to actually be true. I do think that is how it works. you catch a glimpse of what it can do, and then it's got you and you work with it. That's the reality. And you work with it as a human individual with your own genetic and biographical quirks and uniqueness. And a good teacher recognises that. Because a good yoga teacher is somebody who's very, very practiced. Yeah. And the transmission of yoga is something that happens when two practitioners meet in openness, as I said. But the ones got a lot more experience than the other. And that creates a dynamic. And it creates a situation. And it's out of that situation, not out of the teacher teaching, but out of the total dynamic of practitioners meeting, one of whom is more experienced than the other, that people get yoga. Yeah. And they're then able to work with it as their own self-inquiry. But a teacher can't do the self-inquiry for you.
No.
They can help you to an extent, you know, by being encouraging, by being supportive, by being there for you. But not by engaging in the transmission of like tons and tons of information. Like you get when you go to school and you are subjected to a real teacher in a real educational situation. Yoga is not education.
No. This is a very important distinction that we're drawing here, isn't it?
And I mean, incidentally, that's why the Department for Education of the UK government has got no business putting its hands on it in the form of Ofqual or any of these other hideous quangos. So, and certainly no parrot can do this, because parroting makes the mistake of imagining. But one size fits all, number one, and number two, that yoga teaching is actually like ordinary teaching, and it's a transmission of information. This is how to do these 10 postures. This is how to breathe. This is how long it must take. This is what you must wear. This parroting syndrome arises directly out of the confusion between yoga and mainstream education, and this happened for historical reasons in the UK. I don't know about other places, but the first place that yoga found a home on any kind of mass popularity scale was in the adult education system. And so
in Britain,
yeah, way back in the 1960s. And
yeah, it still has overtones of that, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's hard to shake it off.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of deeply imprinted on yoga culture, you know, to the point that it's invisible to people.
Okay, so in your next verse of the poem that you read out at the beginning, you mentioned missionaries.
Yeah, others are missionaries who would capture you with this or that story. So urgent is their soul's need to be right. I mean, this is a real...
That's just it all, really.
Yeah, this is a real motivation.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Not that I want to compare yoga teachers to the kind of people who knock your door and ask you if you've heard the good news, the Jehovah's Witnesses and so forth. Yeah. It seems to me that anybody who has that kind of faith must also be harbouring a kernel of doubt. No doubt deeply repressed, but nevertheless able to exert a discomfort within the psyche of the missionary. And it's that discomfort which drives people to convert. Because if you can convert somebody, it solves the pain of the repressed doubt. And we do see this missionary activity arising out of the fact that yoga historically has grown up within religious contexts, within religious cultures dominated by this or that religion. And yoga in this sense has informed many of the many religious cultures, but it also has been dressed up in the discourses and the symbolism of some of those religious cultures. And so you do get the phenomenon of the convert, you know, And I think this arises strictly out of missionary activity. And missionary activity arises out of faith, which of course always carries within it the kernel of doubt and the possibility of a crisis of faith. And the whole thing arises out of that, and it's not what it's about. Now, the next thing that I mentioned was power freakery or power trippery. So, yet others need you for their pleasure, which is domination.
Yeah.
Now, we should be aware that human beings play dominance games all the time. I mean, if you wanted to be uncharitable, you'd say it's primate behaviour. But it is a fact of life. And we should also take cognizance of the fact that power exerted over another is a drug. I mean, Nietzsche gives a really good account of how this works. You know, it's a drug. In fact, it is the greatest narcotic of all, and the greatest aphrodisiac of all, power. But at the same time, it does give rise to problems. I mean, we hear a lot in the spiritual supermarket about abuses and cults and all this kind of stuff. And this is really this impulse to dominance playing itself out on in that realm. And actually, that impulse to dominance, it can have a field day in the world of the spiritual supermarket or in the world of yoga teaching. Because actually, if people are getting even just a little bit of what this is about, they actually can become quite vulnerable or go through a vulnerable stage. I mean, to really get yoga, you need to be open and vulnerable anyway. And so the yoga teaching system is really ripe for this kind of play, and it's very common. There's a book called The Guru Papers, which has been out some time, and it's by Joel Kramer and Diana Alstad, and they're both yoga teachers, but they've given a survey of power trips that teachers get on, and of course the guru, you know, the figure of the guru, of course, what, you know, he's allowed to do this. You know, it's thought to be the guru's role to go on some kind of a power trip, or to put it the other way around, you know, for the disciple to abase themselves completely, you know. And that actually is, it's more to do with Indian culture, with its authoritarian and patriarchal strands, than it is to do with yoga per se. And of course, if you want to do these kind of power trips, and this works for the missionary trip as well, it helps if you've got a few tricks up your sleeve that you can impress people with. And there are tricks, and there are techniques for getting people to have experiences that convince them that, you know, I call them psyops.
Psychic operations.
Psychological operations. Yeah. And they're all over the place on Planet Yoga. And they are actually tricks, but they impress. I nearly said they impress simple folk, but they actually...
Can you give me an example of one, just so if anybody experiences this, they can recognise it?
I remember going back a little bit in Wolverhampton, there was a cult that got quite big amongst the young hippies and the young idealistic people. And some guru was giving them knowledge, you know, the complete knowledge of the life, the universe and everything.
Yeah.
But in order to get it, they had to... They were made to wait. And they were psyched up. First of all, they were hyped up into expecting it by a systematic love bombing, which makes them feel as though they're really, really, really missing out on something. And that's played and played and played for weeks on end while they have to go through this waiting probationary period.
Oh, yeah.
Preparatory period, inverted commas. And then the day comes, and by that time, they're kind of really psyched up. And the guy comes along, and the guru, and he presses their eyeballs or something like that, and they see a flash of light, you know.
Yeah.
And they're so kind of hyped up and so tense, you know, by the expectation,
yeah,
by the thought of missing out on something, and this all this is just very skillfully intensified and intensified. And then when the time comes and you get the mantra or you get the press on the eyeballs, you know, there's basically this sudden release of tension, you know, which is quite dramatic.
Yeah.
Plus they might get something to happen anyway, you know?
Yeah.
And the acolyte then has a conversion experience, you know, and then thinks, well, I've got the knowledge now.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's a trick, it's a psychological game, you know, it's caused by tension and release. And some of these manipulations can be quite subtle. The stuff that you get to know if you practice yoga about the subtleties of human consciousness, you know.
Yeah.
And if you're a bastard, you can really play havoc with people if that's what gets your rocks off or flouts your boat.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I know that the Mail on Sunday go overboard exposing cults, and I think, well, people should be able to make their mistakes, you know. But at the same time, this stuff, some kind of pretty seedy stuff does go down simply because of this, really a lack of recognition of the just what a role dominance plays in human life.
Okay, so in the next verse of your poem, you talk about sages.
Yeah. A very few sages who will tell you they have nothing to teach. Well, I can tell you this. I don't think I'm a sage or anything like that. I'm an ordinary council estate, white trash, who accidentally got well educated whilst working in a job wiping shitty arses, you know. So, but I can say, honestly, I've got nothing to teach. I have nothing to teach because you already have got it. It might seem as though I know, to some people have anger only me, that I know something that they don't, but really they've got it as well. I mean, I do feel as though I'm very lucky and blessed in life, even though life's quite tough as well, in terms of personal circumstances and all that kind of thing. But everybody's got it, and I see that they've got it. You know, okay, I say that people look bemused when I say to them, you've got it, you know. You know why the Buddha smiled in that totally fantastic fashion. You know that. You know why the sages of the Upanishads were so chilled out. You know that because it's a part of your being. And see, the word yoga means a couple of things, but its real meaning is, or its prime meaning that gets lost sight of. It refers to the being state of beatitude, of wholeness, of totalness, of being completely at home in life and in the world. That's what it refers to, the being state. And everything you say about that being state, it falls short. You can't F the ineffable.
Yeah.
You know?
So, you certainly can't regulate the ineffable.
You fucking certainly can't. You know, but it is utterly fantastic, but I don't think it's something that's cultivated. It's something that lurks within you, and it gets a bit obscured by your education and all the rest of it, and being busy and involved in the ups and downs of life can make it a bit obscure for people. And I actually even think there's a part of the mechanisms of social enculturation do conspire to bury it somewhat, you know. We're encouraged to repress our beatitude, our bliss, our knowledge that we get with clear eyes. All of this is obscured for us. But nevertheless, the thing doesn't go away. The yoga being state actually is the ground of being and the ground of life and the ground of consciousness. None of it would be possible without it. Now this sounds strange and all the rest of it, but take it or leave it, basically. So I see my job not as telling anybody anything or handing over any information, except to keep saying to them, you've got it. Stop pissing about, you've got it. You know.
And just occasionally pointing by perhaps teaching them how to do a yoga posture.
Well, there's a kind of point.
And that's like, and that even in itself, because I could imagine somebody saying, oh, but that's teaching, isn't it? Teaching somebody to do the triangle.
Yeah.
That is really just simply pointing.
Yeah, I see my activities as really as pointing, precisely, you know, pointing. and pointing at what people have got and telling them they needn't be cultivating anything. Now, parrot yoga is cultivation. Missionary yoga is cultivation. Dominance yoga is cultivation. But yoga yoga isn't cultivation. Yoga yoga is...
abandoning cultivation.
Abandoning cultivation, yeah. Yoga yoga is finding what you already have.
Yeah.
Just and climbing and living with and going on the adventure that then ensues when you catch a glimpse of the being state, or even if you're luckier than that, if the being state then haunts you for the rest of your life.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So that's what it's about, as far as I can see. Yeah, meet you in openness if you can. Meet you in openness if you can. And again, this is this dynamic that I referred to earlier of a slightly more experienced person, somebody who's run with this. You know, once you get a glimpse of the yoga being sat, you can either try and repress it and carry on as normal, or you can run with it. Glimpsing the yoga being sat is nothing. There's nothing final about it. It's a beginning.
Yeah.
And it's a beginning of an adventure through a world of wonder. And intensity, that is what it is.
Okay, well, I hope you found that interesting and hopefully useful too. And we'll be speaking to you again.